Did you know nearly one-third of supplement consumers in the U.S. are unsatisfied with the current immune-supporting drinks on the market? Help your consumers get the products they want with Immuse, the novel, clinically researched postbiotic that activates our body's natural defenses at the cellular level for year-round immune support. Formulate with the immune health ingredients backed by 30-plus research studies. Learn more at immusehealth.com. That's Immuse, I-M-M-U-S-E, health.com.
Hello, and thanks for tuning into episode 83 of Taste Radio Insider. I'm Ray Lateef, the editor and producer of Taste Radio, and I'm with my BevNet and Nosh colleagues, Mike Schneider, Melissa Traverse, and Carol Ortenberg. In this episode, we're joined by Jessica Young, the founder and CEO of Bubble, an online marketplace focused on better-for-you and clean-label brands. Just a reminder, if you like what you hear on Taste Radio, please share the podcast with friends and colleagues. And of course, we'd love it if you could review us on the Apple Podcasts app or your listening platform of choice. Everyone's trying to find ways to be entertained when you're home in quarantine. So this weekend, I found a way to be entertained by eating some of these Bean Boozle jelly beans. You know those things? So Jelly Belly puts out... Yeah, Jelly Belly,
yes.
The renowned jelly bean company, a few years back introduced this new line of products where there are jelly beans that look like their traditional flavors, things like buttered popcorn or toasted marshmallow or juicy pear, but in actuality are gross out flavors like stink bug, rotten egg, and booger. So they have all these beans in this jar, and basically you shake them all up and you could be getting one of their famous flavors, like, you know, my favorite's juicy pear, or you could be getting that booger flavor, which looks exactly like a juicy pear. I guess that's one way to be entertained. I wasn't entertained doing it. I was doing it by myself too, which is probably not a really fun thing to do. I think you're supposed to do this with other people.
I think it's hilarious. We had those in the office. I think Brad Avery brought them in and was trying to trick people with those. But remember, that used to be, originally that was a partnership with the Harry Potter people, and it was Bertie Bott's every flavor beans, and you were supposed to feel like a wizard eating them, Ray.
I didn't feel like a wizard at
it's
all.
A wizard prank.
Yeah, no, you are supposed to prank folks with these, I think. You know who reached out to me? I put these on my Instagram feed, and Kate Weiler from Drink Simple reached out, and she said she participated in one of these Bean Boozled competitions, or I don't know what you would call it, Bean Boozled experiments at an Expo East a few years ago, and she said it was not pleasant, not a pleasant experience.
Yeah, what would the maple flavor one be? What would the Bean Boozled flavor for maple be?
A bad maple flavor? Oh, I don't know.
Rotten eggs?
Pine needles or something? Actually, pine needle jelly beans might be good. I don't know.
I wouldn't hate
that. Sounds fancy.
I like IPAs, you know.
Yeah, there you go. I like IPAs. Carol, it's been a while since we've heard or seen from you. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. We're just chugging along in Noshland. Lots of exciting news going on.
Chugging along, it makes you sound like part of the Brewbound team.
Oh.
Should I say kaling, hemping, collagening along? I can pick some.
Hemping
much more appropriate.
Indeed.
Carol, we actually have heard from you. I saw you on video the other day doing an interview with the CEO of Lilly's.
Yeah, it was great to catch up with Jane Miller. She's always such an inspiring CEO and in how she leads her team and thinks so strategically about, you know, this was supposed to be a really big growth year for the company. But at the same time, if there's a recession, you know, what happens for the chocolate market and how do you kind of plan for two paths for growth? Meanwhile, they launched a new low-sugar chocolate chip cookie into certain Costco regions, and it's exciting to hear during this time about new product launches.
It definitely is. I mean, it's a huge part of what we cover on BevNet and Nosh. And speaking with entrepreneurs during our recent Elevator Talk live stream shows, you know, a lot of them talked about wanting to launch or preparing to launch in 2020 and not being able to do so because of the crisis. And you know, Melissa, you told me that, you know, you've been speaking to entrepreneurs about, you know, how to prepare for when buyers are ready to start reviewing and looking at new products and new brands and adding them to their shelves, because it doesn't seem like they're doing that right now.
Definitely not so much. And it's one of the questions that brands have in the forefront of their minds. And there are a few things that I think would be helpful for brands to keep in mind moving towards a time when retailers are having those meetings. Besides all of the housekeeping things that we've talked about before, tightening up branding, shoring up your supply chain, focusing on social and social metrics, all that stuff is good. But in addition to all that stuff, being prepared to show relevance, a lot of larger brands are in the process of skewing down and focusing on faster moving inventory. So brands who are looking to pitch new products should really take a hard look at the space and make sure they're offering something truly unique. This will help them not only with buyers, but also with consumers. So in an economic downturn, consumers are looking to trade over to private label products, looking for cheaper alternatives. So really making sure that they're offering something truly unique and needed in the space. Also for e-commerce, you know, we've talked plenty about e-commerce. So whether it's Amazon, Jet, Thrive, Hubba, getting really knowledgeable and comfortable with those platforms and the data that they get. So making sure they know how to pull reports, what's a good ad spend, so that that sales history will be something that they can truly understand and share with buyers when they are able to secure those meetings.
All great points. You know, I would highly recommend folks listen to every episode of Taste Radio and Taste Radio Insider. But last week's episode, episode 82 of Insider, when we sat down with Lee Robinson, who's the director of dairy and beverage for Whole Foods Market, really outlined how the retailer is looking at their review schedule for new brands and new products. Lee, you know, indicated that they are continuing to assess opportunities to expand their selection, but he urged entrepreneurs not to send in products without having first spoken to a category leader or a forager.
Yes, this is probably not the time to be persistently pursuing an email response or phone response three times a week from your buyer. It comes off as a little bit tone deaf, and I think that retailers will have long-term memories for this period of time.
That said, you know, we are seeing launches into Whole Foods. Haven's Kitchen and Cleveland Kitchen both launched, I believe, nationwide into Whole Foods over the last 2 weeks. And we're hearing about resets coming back to retailers in the next month. And on top of that, you know, was speaking with a distributor who said they're having more calls than ever with new brands. So I think it is a case-by-case basis and really figuring out, you know, what's the right tactics for each individual retailer and distributor.
So I think the moral of the story is that where there's a will, there's a way. And, you know, you have to keep your pitch fresh. You have to keep your data in front of you. And, you know, you're going to have to do your best to project what your results would be in a new normal. Nobody knows what that new normal is going to look like. But remember that retailers are going to want to see you prepared. They're going to want to know what to expect from you. And so you have to, you know, take your best guess at it.
I think there's been some great points here, but for more clarity, it also happens to be a topic on next week's Office Hours, which will be about category reviews and resets and new directions for retail. Tune in this coming Tuesday at 3 p.m. Eastern to learn more about that.
Of course, Office Hours is our new call-in show, as Carol said, that will be every Tuesday, 3 p.m., hosted by Jeff Kleinman.
3 p.m. Eastern time for folks listening on the West Coast. That's noon Pacific time. Mike, I heard you're starting a beverage company.
Ray, let's say I was. Do you have any suggestions for a complete partner?
Absolutely. Ingredion. Ingredion is a leading global plant-based ingredient solutions provider to the food and beverage industry with a diverse portfolio, including sweeteners and sugar reduction technologies, plant-based proteins, starches, and hydrocolloids.
Of course. Ingredients 360 Value Framework delivers value according to your brand's specific needs through consumer well-being, environmental impact, and value creation. Ingredients market research and insights for innovation can help uncover opportunities within the beverage space. For instance, figuring out what added health benefits consumers need. They have a network of technical experts that will help you solve your pain points to get you to market faster. With Ingredient, you gain a partner who helps you deliver the total beverage experience that keeps consumers coming back.
To learn more about Ingredient, head to tasteradio.com/beverage.
Meet one-to-one with buyers from Whole Foods Market, GoPuff, and Lowe's Foods at BevNet Live on June 12th and 13th in New York City. To be considered for a retail meeting, register for the two-day event at bevnetlive.com.
The New Beverage Showdown returns to BevNet Live in New York City on June 12th and 13th. Pitch your beverage startup in front of a panel of expert judges, our live audience, and viewers tuning into the live stream. To learn more, visit bevnetlive.com.
You know, it's great to hear that distributors are interested in bringing on new brands and that retailers are looking at ways to follow through on their resets. You know, a big question remains about how you demo and sample your products. Field marketing just seems to be something that's still a ways away. And just how it's going to work logistically is something that's very much unanswered at this point. I'd love to chat a little bit about ways that brands are attempting to get samples to consumers. You know, the most visible and obvious way that I've seen it done and done effectively is via free samples or offering free samples on Instagram and just having the recipient pay for shipping. The guys behind Super Coffee did that really effectively last year when they rolled out their Super Espresso line. It seemed to work out really well in terms of liquid to lips and just building awareness for that new line.
I've certainly heard of a number of brands who are working on sample sizes, bite-sized products that they can sample in a variety of ways. So that's definitely something that I'm hearing more of.
Earlier this week on Nosh, we also covered how some experiential businesses are pivoting to more sampling offerings that can be mailed direct to consumers. For example, office snack company Snack Nation now launched a direct-to-consumer box that employers can send their employees, give them a little work-from-home wellness, I think they're calling it, along with coffee. And then one idea I loved is this company called Hello Mailbox. And so, you know how everyone says, let's grab a coffee together. You, if you say that to someone, can, through her site, mail them a high-brew coffee can or a bag of coffee beans, and literally brew it or crack open the can and have a coffee together. And I was like, that's such a great idea.
That's really cool. One of my favorite trends during the pandemic has been to watch the rise of beverage e-commerce. Brands like Revive, Get Online, and Better Booch build their experiences along with, you know, some of the brands that we've already seen, like, you know, the Spudsies of the world who have been doing e-commerce for a while. It's just really been interesting to see how these sites have popped up and how the experiences look really great. If you want to learn more about e-commerce and how to launch your e-commerce experience, you should definitely check out Taste Radio episode 82 with Soylent co-founder John Coogan, who gave us a really great overview of how to do that.
And Ray, this might be teasing the episode, but I assume e-commerce was a big part of the conversation of what you talked to the founder and CEO of Bubble about.
Indeed, it was. They have a pretty innovative approach to online retail. And Jessica is extremely well-spoken and intelligent about how she's plotting to take on the giants and bring exposure and awareness to a lot of small brands who wouldn't necessarily have it otherwise when it comes to e-com.
And she's doing it all with a new puppy that I see on Instagram. Very adorable puppy.
The puppy actually appears a couple times during the show. You can barely hear the puppy, but it's there.
Well, that's what we needed on Taste Radio is puppies and kittens to increase our ratings.
That's really what I need more of.
That's what the world needs now.
Well, we've talked a bit about Jessica Young and her company Bubble, so perhaps it's time to get to our interview.
Before we go, Ray, though, I just want to remind our listeners that there's still a chance to get charter member benefits by subscribing to BevNet and Nosh. Visit tasteradio.com/charter member to learn about them.
Don't wait.
As mentioned at the top of the show, Jessica Young is the CEO and founder of Bubble, a curated e-commerce platform for health-focused and clean label products. Launched in January of 2019, Bubble promotes itself as, quote, the most transparent food marketplace, and carries a range of packaged food and beverage brands that must meet a rigorous set of standards, including clean ingredients and commitment to sustainability, to be sold on its site. Bubble currently represents over 180 brands and over 1,000 products, and is rapidly expanding its reach amid surges in online shopping and consumer demand for better-for-you products. In the following interview, I spoke with Jessica about how she drew upon her diverse career experience to create Bubble, how she assessed the opportunities and challenges for the company and thoughtfully communicated each to investors, enhancing visibility for small brands via the platform, what she anticipates as the next evolution of e-commerce.
Hey folks, it's Ray with Taste Radio. I'm going to call right now with Jessica Young, the founder and CEO of Bubble. Jessica, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing pretty fantastic. Where are you calling from this morning?
I am currently in Pennsylvania at my parents' house. I fled New York about a month and a half ago in the middle of, you know, stay-at-home orders hitting the city. So I left hanging out. I have a new puppy on my lap, so new addition, and running Bubble completely remote. So no complaints. Everyone kind of on my side is healthy, happy, and we're rocking and rolling. It's weird to be, you know, 31 living back home for an extended period of time, you know, getting told to take my dishes out of the sink. And so, no, but it's good. I'm valuing, you know, the family time and getting a lot of cooking in. I ordered like 4 different bread starters from, you know, ancient sourdough kind of things online. So I've been experimenting with that. And, you know, I'm enjoying the slowdown. A lot, actually.
You probably know how to make sourdough better than most people because you were a trained chef.
Yeah, you know, I love cooking. I think there's something to be said for doing something personally versus professionally. You know, when you're kind of forced to do something, it sometimes can take a little bit of the glimmer out of it. But I originally got into cooking, kind of being in the kitchen and in the food world in the middle of college. I was going to college kind of on a pre-med biochemistry track and was cued to graduate early, was taking a pause because I was like, whoa, I'm going down this road really quickly. I had a friend living in New York that I would go up and visit. And she told me that her roommate was moving out. Would I want to, you know, move to the city, maybe do something, take a break? And then I decided to go and enroll in cooking school, which was always a passion of mine. By no means was it a professional decision or life path choice. And basically, when I enrolled in cooking school, I never looked back. I was totally ignited by the food scene in New York, knew that that deep down in my gut was the world I needed to be in, or I think was meant to be in, and never looked back, never went back to college, which was an interesting thing at the time to kind of jump off that cliff, but no regrets and haven't looked back since.
So once in New York City, it's probably hard to leave the city. It's a really fun place to be and work at some pretty interesting places you did. Tell us a bit about your career experience and I guess how it all led to the creation of Bubble.
Yeah, it was definitely a windy path. Not something I would recommend for anybody else, not even myself. I don't know kind of how everything has led me to where I am now, honestly, looking back. But, you know, I would say just followed my passion. So when I graduated cooking school, I got immediately right into fine dining. I didn't know if that was my forever kind of role or career, but it was definitely, you know, a place I knew I wanted to be in and dedicate my career at the time to. So worked in some pretty fancy restaurants in New York City. I would say most notably the Modern, which is 2 Michelin inside the MoMA. So from working in fine dining, I got the opportunity to join the opening crew at Hugh Kitchen. I got a call one day. I was bouncing in between private chefing for some notable people in the city and working in fine dining restaurants. I would, you know, work as a private chef basically to make ends meet. Got a call one day from some of my chef buddies who were brought in to open Hugh Kitchen saying, "Hey, Jess, we need someone to run the pastry program of this new fast casual paleo restaurant. Can you do it?" And I'm like, first of all, what is paleo? I've never heard of this. And they're like, "Look, you're the only person we know who knows what almond flour is and what to do with it. So you need to get in here." So, you know, I was definitely at the time bouncing around with a lot of what now is very health focused, wellness focused food. I had a vegan pop-up restaurant that I would run with some of my chef buddies. Throughout the year, we would do super high-end plant-based meals, very much like the menu of ABCV, but before that existed, really just focusing on plant. It wasn't kind of a moral vegan route. It was really about plants and what they brought to the table, literally. you know, went into Hugh Kitchen kind of blindly, leading their pastry program, developing recipes, working with the team there. And I was really ignited by kind of that startup culture. And that really piqued my interest, kind of putting something together from the ground up, still being within the food world, which I was really passionate about. But this was definitely pushing the envelope, you know, really restricting to a paleo menu, seeing something come up from nothing. And I wanted to be a part of that. I then got an opportunity at a meal kit company. And that was really my big introduction into startup e-commerce and that whole culture. And that was the next, I would say, big light bulb moment in my career. And really what did it for me kind of in that world was making a difference at a large scale. I wanted to be a part of food and I didn't see that happening. And it was getting quite burnt out in fine dining. It wasn't making a difference. And I was really attracted to these bigger scalable models that would truly impact kind of like my own family, right? People that don't have access to, you know, what these things are. And the meal kit industry was doing that. So jumped in at Ritual to run operations. Again, that was sort of like a total intro into business. Things like Series A were getting thrown around. To me, that was a baseball term, right? When I got involved, I was like, what is a series? What are we talking about here? So I really educated myself a lot. I signed up for every General Assembly class. I was still living with my friend who was at NYU at the time. She was attending Stern, and I would actually take her student ID and sneak into a lot of the lectures in her business classes and listen to a lot of VCs. And totally immersed myself, I think gave myself kind of like my own little MBA at the time. And then from there was introduced by someone at that company to a woman named Rachel Drury, who was looking to start a company called Daily Harvest. And the way this person introduced me to her was that she was looking to make a play for frozen. She has a great kind of product basis, but needs a me, you know, quote me. And I'm like, okay, what is a me? And he goes, someone who really understands food and also understands D2C, you know, logistics and carrier networks, because no one else kind of has this mixture of both. And she needs a first hire and you would be a perfect fit. So went to her house, sat down at the kitchen table. We kind of talked about the product, aligned on mission and brand and where that was going. And I think the rest is history. Joined as Daily Harvest's first employee and kind of built out all things back end while Rachel really focused a lot on the brand and customer growth and, you know, setting us up for kind of national expansion really, really quickly. We went from being available on the East Coast to completely national within a year and a half. That was definitely a rocket ship to be a part of. It was everything I was looking for within a company in e-commerce. I was looking to be a part of a company that would truly scale, truly hold brand value and resonate with customers before kind of branching out or doing anything on my own at some point in the future. And obviously kind of mission aligned to kind of the food that I am always a part of in my career. I think that's like a very common thread, things that are good for you, but also taste really great. That's super important to everything I'm about. And now kind of with Bubble, that has all these paths have led to Bubble. So it's definitely kind of been that yellow brick road all leading to Bubble.
It certainly seems like that. You know, you've gone from inside the kitchen to product development, to the nuts and bolts of CPG, now immersing yourself in retail. Why retail? Why do you think you can make the biggest impact in that sector?
I had started to really make a name for myself in e-commerce. And what kept coming to me were a ton of companies looking for, you know, retail sales points. And I was at the time thinking about leaving Daily Harvest to start my own food label as a next step. And I didn't really have a time frame in place. I just knew that, okay, I think when Daily Harvest is at the right place, I'm going to jump out and do my own line of food. That's been a dream of mine for a long time. But there seemed to be this bigger issue outlying, which was the distribution point. You know, all these brands were looking to be picked up. They didn't understand direct to consumer. Amazon wasn't a fit. Their distributors were kind of taking too long or were too costly. But that e-commerce, if you hit it right, seemed to be the win. And that was the question that kept coming to me was, okay, how are you guys doing this at Daily Harvest? And I didn't have a good answer for all the companies coming to me. I'm like, look, you have one standalone product And, you know, what kind of came out of my mouth in these conversations was speaking to me wanting to launch my own brand. I was in the same position. I was going to be in the same position as all of these other brands. And so the problem that existed was that there wasn't basically a marketplace for curated goods in the same way that other verticals suited that model, right? You have in the craft space, Etsy curating and giving a platform to all of these brands. You have Grubhub and Seamless answering this for delivery food. You have Sephora curating and doing this for beauty. But when you looked at the health food world, which has one of the most dedicated customer bases, online grocery kind of, you know, growing 40% year over year, why does this industry not have a solution? And so that issue drove me to look into the space further, understand the ins and outs of marketplace. I really started to have a lot of conversations before jumping out and doing this on my own. And so when I knew that the numbers were there and that this was a serious problem within food, I wanted to be the person to address that and definitely had the experience to.
Mike, I was just in the kitchen and I saw this really cool THC-infused beverage brand called Eighth Wonder.
Ah, chill brand. They make cannabis bevs as well as beer and spirits. The product you're talking about is a super tasty cherry limeade cannabis seltzer called Lil Bit. And did you know Eighth Wonder was acquired last year by Houston's BioCity Hemp?
Yes, I did. That deal created a world-class, vertically integrated cannabis and craft beverage company. Bio's science-based processes for extracting THC from hemp have made the company the gold standard for cannabis products across Texas and beyond.
Bayou's cannabis portfolio includes Eighth Wonder as well as Howdy and Beach Break, all of which are distributed throughout Texas and Louisiana.
You can learn more about all these brands at eighthwonder.com, siphowdy.com, and sipbeachbreak.com.
On June 12th and 13th in New York City, hear from Icelandic Glacial, Lemon Perfect, GoPuff, Sachet, Diageo Ventures, and Lowe's Foods during the leading event for the beverage industry. Save on BevNet Live tickets through April 26th. Just visit bevnetlive.com.
When you were starting out, I assume you had a business plan. And I'm curious, given your self-taught MBA, what you did for SWOT analysis, in other words, strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, threats, and what you see as Bubble's biggest strength. And what's its biggest weakness?
Yeah, I think, you know, touching on Amazon being a juggernaut, it doesn't mean that that will always remain or that that suits every industry. You know, I definitely compare us all the time. And, you know, yes, we did do an initial SWOT analysis, but we constantly do them, you know, really every quarter. We're looking at our competitors. How are we, you know, fitting into the customer's lifestyle and making that win, right? Because Amazon is not a fit for every scenario in your life, even though, you know, they try to be, and that's great. Love Amazon, really. I'm a loyal customer, but it doesn't suit everything, right? When I look for quality, when I look for curation, I'm not buying my beauty products on Amazon. I'm not buying my clothing from Amazon as much as they may try. And they're really focused on scale and deal hunting. You know, when designing Bubble and looking at the landscape, you know, I was definitely looking at Amazon. I was looking at Erewhon in LA, which is like Disney World for health food fanatics like myself. You know, when I land in LA, my first stop is not In-N-Out Burger. So hopefully that doesn't put too many people off. It's Erewhon. I want to go walk the floor, see what's going on. That's more exciting to me than, you know, going to Expo East or West. And so I wanted to bring that to the rest of the country. I wanted to bring the experience I wanted to other people or that I had access to the rest of the country, to my own family, you know, here in Pennsylvania. And then kind of looking at Thrive Market, you know, I think they started off in a great way. They're very much Costco meets Whole Foods. They describe themselves that way. You need to be a member to shop on their site. And then similar to Costco, that membership is in a way subsidizing the deal that you see with the products on their site. They're buying in large volume, they're inventorying those items, and then they're passing that discount on to you. And so to be a brand, kind of on the brand side, to fit into that Costco model, you have to have serious scale behind you to fund those POs, to then get a discount to pass on the Thrive Market so that they can pass that on to their customers. And so when I was looking at the landscape, I was, you know, again, looking for low barriers for brands to be on. I wanted wanted to have a platform that was both small and big brand friendly. And so, and that was the win to me, was that landscape of aggregating both small and large brands with the commonality of clean label, innovation, and something that customers would love, that, you know, and at the end of the day, we could all be scaling together. And that was the ecosystem that really both set us apart and is setting us up for scale and kind of the pushing the future of food forward.
This all sounds amazing. And I can imagine your investor presentation is pretty buttoned up based on what you just communicated to me. You know, what did they see as the biggest opportunity for Bubble? What part of your business plan were they most concerned about?
Yeah, that's a good question. We do have investors now. Started the company on with, you know, traditionally my own savings, my own dime. I'm a, you know, single female. And so, you know, I don't have any other kind of situations backing me. So it was a big leap of faith to make sure really everything was buttoned up on my side. I'm also a solo founder. I didn't actually intend for that to happen. It just did. I was really looking for a co-founder. I just couldn't find the right fit. And so definitely every team member that I bring on is definitely a co-founder in some way to me. So we balance each other out. But, you know, it was a huge leap of faith for me to A, make sure that this is the right next move. You know, B, was I equipped to do this? C, is this something I want to dedicate the next 5-10 years of my life to? And so taking that from having like a self-funded operation to then bringing in friends and family. I'm currently in the middle of raising a seed round. You know, the biggest opportunity that investors see is really what I see is that we are in one of the fastest growing categories in consumer, which is online grocery. The adoption rates have been soaring kind of before the coronavirus hit. Now that we are in the middle of this, a third of the country now has been shopping online. You know, I think it's only proving out what we're doing. So the one major contributor is that we do need to be very shoppable and offer a lot of different items in particular categories. And so that was a factor of time for us to kind of build that inventory roster. So, you know, investors definitely see what we see, which is that there needs to be some sort of protection around food and a leader within the health food scene and someone who's supporting both small and large brands. And that's really where we come in.
And so were they concerned about the fact that you're so laser focused on one particular segment of the food industry? You know, I ask that not because I'm trying to be judgmental about, you know, your selection. It's just that it could feel to some investors like it is a very narrow focus.
Totally. And I think that's with any company. When you bring investors in, you bring tons of different opinions. I've been in meetings where people have told me, you know, oh, wouldn't it be great if you had, you know, like you guys have healthy Cheetos, you actually sell Cheetos as well. And that way the customer can buy both the healthy and not healthy option in the same place. And while that may be a great idea, that's not something I believe in. And that is the core value of our company. We really believe that Bubble is the future of food by both what we sell, how we sell it, and the convenience we offer and will be offering down the road with our distribution point. So I would say the biggest point that investors were kind of wary of at this point was because we're a dropship marketplace and we don't take on that inventory risk, we remain very asset light. You know, there are some constraints with that, right? Customers expect to have all of their order delivered in one package. There has been a little bit of communication break in terms of when you place an order, is it coming in one box? So that's something we've had to, you know, address and make sure that we make very clear because we have a seamless checkout and you're buying everything in one shot. You know, things do arrive to you in separate shipments currently. So that was, I would say, the biggest point of conflict. But then when investors kind of understand our full scope and where we're going, that kind of puts those worries to bed.
We've talked a lot about the plan. I'd love to talk about the brands. Tell me about the ideal brand for Bubble. What elements does it have to have?
I would say the ideal brand for Bubble starts with the clean label. We do not pass go with a brand. They are not invited to sell on the platform unless they have a clean label. And for us, that's around these types of sweeteners that are used. We do not allow products that have refined cane sugar in products. Again, kind of coming from a culinary perspective, there are so many other useful sweeteners in the world that should be used in food. Refined cane sugar is a super low cost, you know, cheap way out, in my opinion, and doesn't really add too much depth of flavor. And so we start there. We also don't allow any kind of artificial sweeteners. So we look for products that have honey, unrefined stevia, coconut sugar, kind of low glycemic things are acceptable, date, and things like that. So we start with clean label. We then move to taste. So all products on Bubble are put through our taste test. We really believe that just because a product looks good, has a clean label, doesn't mean it needs to taste like cardboard. And then I think also speaks to the brand we're building. If you have a bad taste experience with something that you've bought at Bubble, we don't believe that that reflects well on Bubble, but also all the other brands that sell, because we very much view what we're building as a kind of co-op with the other brands that are on the platform. So we screen for taste. We also look at branding. And what we've started looking at even more in this past year since we've been launched is how much face value drives purchase. We've started collecting a lot of data around what sells just based on packaging, the coloring of the packaging, and things like that. There's a lot of really interesting insights kind of coming out with that. So we do take branding into consideration as well, just because we know that certain things will move. We will give brands feedback on all of those points, you know, taste, labeling, branding. And then we also look at the people behind the brand, you know, who is running the operation. You know, we get paperwork on file. We got a lot of press this past year as being the Etsy of health food. And while that's an awesome comparison, we also had a lot of mom and pop brands reach out to us thinking they could sell products, but they were in, you know, their own home kitchen making mixtures and tinctures. And we are very much a professional graded site. And so you need to be producing out of a professionally graded and you know, certified kitchen space. And so we really look behind the scenes to, you know, who's running the operation? Is it built to scale? You know, if this product takes off, will we need to kind of give them any additional support? We're almost kind of investors in a way when looking at the brands that we select, because we're scaling every day. And so we know kind of based on projections that some of these brands will struggle if they hit the right note with our customer base based on scale. So that's something we're constantly looking at, revising, and building kind of better systems within our ecosystem for these brands.
Well, it sounds like you have a pretty rigorous and thorough vetting process, which would make me wonder how many brands are actually a fit for Bubble. You know, how many brands do you have in your product selection?
Yeah, we have over 180 brands. We have over 1,000 SKUs offered. And while we're highly selective, you know, I think we're in an industry that is constantly innovating and pumping out new products all the time. I mean, I'm sure, as you know, there are thousands of products that come out every day. We're definitely a part of the future of food wave in what we stand for. And so luckily, we're just seeing more and more of those brands that fit our guidelines every day. So that makes our job much easier. We have a lot of brands that are in the process of launching, and they now come to us with advice before they've launched to get, you know, sampling and kind of our seal of approval before they've actually come to market, which is interesting to see. So it's definitely exciting to be part of, you know, the authority, the leader in the space, which is what we are aiming to do. But yeah, very highly selective, but we're definitely in an innovative category. And so there's just so much innovation all the time. And then I would say even more so now with the brands looking for online sales, having retail be shut off, struggles with Amazon and accounts over there. So the onboarding kind of brands coming to us, there is no shortage. we really actually can't keep up currently with the amount of brands trying to get on Bubble.
Do you have any exclusivity in terms of the brands that you carry? You know, are there any benefits that exist to those brands that are sold exclusively online on Bubble?
We don't hold exclusive, so they have the opportunity to go sell in other channels. We believe that the brand should be expanding outside of Bubble. We really aim to own online. So we have a great brand called Sky High Farms that makes products, and they only are selling on Bubble online because they don't want to manage other channels. They don't want to manage their own website or customer base or customer service. And they get all of that through having the Bubble store in a sense. So whether they stick to that in the future or not, that's not something that we're looking at. If they want to open their own online store, great. But we will be doing some exclusives down the line, really speaking to, I would say we have a really cool drop culture that's been happening on Bubble, similar to the sneaker world. Our customer base is very dedicated. So when we release something new, we see very high sales when that product launches, and we put a lot of marketing initiatives behind that. We have a very powerful email list that we've built in the past year. We've got over 150,000 subscribers to that, where we talk about trend once a week on our newsletter that has a great fan base. And then we do some dedicated emails around products that we really feel our customer would love. And so when products now hit that, they sell. And so we've been really ramping up on that kind of drop culture with our very dedicated customer base, who is looking for the latest and greatest in food. And they're looking for that from us, right? What is Bubble saying is hot? Do I need it? They're really trusting when we say something tastes good and you need it. They're buying it.
I'm assuming a lot of the brand owners and entrepreneurs listening would love to hear more about your customer base. You mentioned 150,000 subscribers to your email newsletter. Who is the average consumer?
Our best and kind of core customer is actually about an hour and a half outside of a city, and is about 45 minutes to 2 hour drive from any type of Whole Foods. So these definitely are the people who are interested, but don't have, you know, physical access. And that online bridge allows them to tap into all these amazing products.
So Jessica, you know, you've been doing this for a little over a year, about 15 months now, and I just learned about Bubble probably a few weeks ago. You know, what's been the most effective way to market and promote and introduce people to Bubble? And, you know, that's not just consumers and customers that I'm talking about. You know, what's been the best way to attract attention within the industry?
Yeah, the best way has been really sticking to our standards. I would say anytime we do that, it not only resonates with customers, but customers become those advocates for shopping on Bubble. Customers and brands, right? Brands bring other brands to us to list. We're definitely in that conversation as, you know, that authority, and that's our goal, right? In the same way that Sephora holds true in beauty, we hope to do the same for the health food industry. You know, sticking to these standards, being that go-to place for customers, and then over time, being the place where brands can really scale as we have, you know, a scaled customer base. So that's really rung true for us, right? Press talks about us when we stick to that. Just really being in that conversation as the leader around quality and standards kind of filters into everything else, right? We've had a massive spike in our email subscriber base, which was not expected. That's now become a major conversion channel for us that is very owned and I think sets us apart. You know, there's a lot of voice and, you know, our point of view that comes through.
Now, you touched on this a little bit earlier in our conversation, which is that the COVID crisis has really changed the way people shop and drawn a lot of Americans to e-commerce and online retail. How are you keeping up? Because I'm sure it's got to be a little overwhelming at this point. You know, you have a message on your website, at the top of your website, which talks about, you know, how busy it has been for Bubble. You know, but what's been your strategy for managing immense growth at a time of crisis?
Yeah, I mean, it's been crazy. Myself and our whole team, we're working, you know, 16, 18 hour days, basically 7 days a week at this point. And we're all working remote, which is new for us because we had a tiny team in New York. We were all in the same room. We could work very quickly, effectively, and, you know, communicate in real time, right? Being in the same room with everyone. So now having to get on a phone, schedule more Zoom calls is adding to I think the speed at which we were working before. So yeah, I mean, as I mentioned earlier, one of the drivers for investors to get involved was just seeing growth trends in the industry, right? And this is stuff that's widely known for any investor in the space. Between 2016 and 2018, online grocery doubled. And so that was real true adoption for buying food online, whether you were at a meal kit or a straight CPG company, just selling product. There was major adoption in that period. last year and kind of moving forward, as I mentioned, about 10% of the population was shopping online. So not huge, but, you know, growth rates were steady, growing 40% year over year. And that was definitely the wave of the future. What the COVID crisis has done is really, I think, pushed forward a lot of behaviors that we saw coming in the next 2-3 years in a much more accelerated way. So a recent report came out that in the past month, 30% of the population shopped online. And of that, 26% shopped online for the first time. So these are people that, you know, have known that they could buy food online, never really did it, and now are. So we saw that kind of in a more reactionary way, a ton of growth come through. We've been managing a lot of brands trying to get on the platform. We've been really trying to prioritize the shift in inventory purchase. Customers really shifted from our more niche, unique items, supplements, and snack goods to straight pantry goods and some, you know, pretty boring stuff that we had on our site that wasn't moving, right? Lentils and beans and pantry staples, sauces, products that are great, but they were honestly not moving that much. And we were grateful that we had this huge inventory of pantry staples on Bubble to offer customers because they were running out in their local stores. So with the wave of keeping up added with escalated rates of adoption, which I think are only going to increase after this period because people are going to be, you know, used to it, right? Oh, I placed this order. It's different demographics getting into this space. You know, it's going to remain, you know, if we go into another period with this crisis of stay-at-home orders in the fall, that's a prediction, you know, we'll be kind of even more set up for what this is. So, you know, my team is managing, you know, we've been looking into customer service solutions, which has been really interesting to kind of set up and manage remote to keep up with the customer side. So, you know, we've been keeping up with customer demand through bringing in external teams around customer service. So that's been an adventure to not have that, you know, in our budget or plan and to kind of shuffle that around. We're doing a ton of regular check-ins. We do with our team morning check-ins, afternoon check-ins, and then we've amped up our kind of like one-on-one touch bases to manage workflow and make sure we're on the same page.
You know, you and I talked prior to this interview, and you talked about the potential for perishable on Bubble and the opportunity there. I mean, do you see that as the most important and most impactful part of not just what you do in the future, but for e-commerce in general?
Yeah, you know, that's really what I've dedicated my career to, and I think made a name for myself in, is that perishability front. That's not something too many people, you know about, that's on the way for us. You know, people definitely relate us and know Bubble as, you know, the go-to place for cool snacks and pantry goods. Releasing our bread collection in the middle of this crisis was a nod to what's on the way. And so, you know, I think the future of food is a very independent and varied system. It's not big food that all is private labeled under one, you know, company. And, you know, there's a lack of quality there. I think if you make, you know, the best Szechuan pepper sauce, you are that person and you should be the person to drive that brand and make that product. It's not coming from one big brand. And so our system and what's been really our saving grace through this crisis has been our, you know, asset light, varied inventory shipping directly from the brand system because we've had minimal delays. I know you touched on a kind of warning up top on our site, you know, looking at the comps from Instacart to even Thrive Market, you know, getting groceries, you know, Thrive Market has gone in and out of not accepting new members. You know, there's a 2-week delay on Fresh Direct if you go to place it. Grocery order right now. And with Bubble, we really haven't seen too many delays. And the reason we have that warning on our site right now is really for the carrier networks. Our brands are fulfilling faster than ever. You know, we have weekly inventory checks with everyone to make sure that, you know, we're providing our customers, you know, real-time product changes. And it's really just been on the carrier networks being overwhelmed with deliveries that we're seeing delays. So, you know, I think that points to where we're going in the future with perishable, you know, and our localized delivery that will be on the way with the independent brands that are the backbone of Bubble.
You know, I can't wait to see how the platform evolves, you know, in the coming months and years. It sounds like you've got the foundation for something really amazing. in supporting small and emerging brands and innovative concepts, it seems like it's the center of the bullseye in terms of what we need in our industry. So congratulations on everything you've built to this point, Jessica, and good luck with everything going forward with Bubble.
Thank you. Yeah, that means a lot. We're excited, and we have many, many updates on the way that we're excited to share with customers.
Yeah, I'm excited to hear about them. Please stay in touch.
I will, of course.
That brings us to the end of episode 83 of Taste Radio Insider. Thank you so much for listening, and thanks to our guest, Jessica Young. Please subscribe to Taste Radio on the Apple Podcasts app, Spotify, Stitcher, or Google Podcasts. As always, for questions, comments, ideas for future podcasts, please send us an email to ask@tasteradio.com. On behalf of the entire Taste Radio team, thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.